Arguably, not since the time of Chizkiyahu HaMelech in the first Beis HaMikdash, has there been such a proliferation of Limud HaTorah. And perhaps for the first time, we have witnessed the normalization, a universal availability of an extended and sustained yeshiva experience beyond adolescence for virtually all Orthodox men. And this comes with the obvious benefits of increased knowledge and appreciation for the profundity of Torah and its endless breadth and depth, and ultimately is responsible for the renewed and augmented observance of mitzvahs and cherished Minhagei Yisrael that we have witnessed in recent years throughout the diverse spectrum of the Torah community. Nonetheless, as this new reality has become entrenched and almost even taken for granted, there has emerged a growing demand to articulate the goals and the benefits of the post-high school and postgraduate yeshiva experience, particularly for the majority of the community that will not make the Beis Medrash their permanent home. Obviously, Limud HaTorah and intimately interacting with the Ribono Shel Olam is the greatest of all virtues, and we should seize every opportunity we have to do so. However, perhaps we don't discuss enough the unique impact and position that our years in yeshiva beyond high school occupy in the long-term religious arc and spiritual trajectory of every person. Many young men return from Eretz Yisrael after learning in yeshiva or upon graduating from yeshiva university, and they experience great difficulty translating that experience of intense religious growth and inspiration into the complex structure of academic and professional life. They likely find themselves unable to sustain the lofty standards and rigorous in-depth learning and schedule they had become accustomed to in yeshiva. And this can certainly lead to frustration, to disappointment, and confusion regarding the purpose and role of the experience in the first place. So certainly, it's essential to develop advanced skills for independent learning and to acquire the practical knowledge that's necessary to conduct a home which is committed to Torah and Halacha, and of course this can't be overstated. However, aside from the practical matters, how can and should one integrate the world of the yeshiva with the real world of work and family? Is the yeshiva experience just more Torah, more skills, more knowledge, or is it a qualitatively and fundamentally different experience than the Torah that a person will learn beforehand or afterwards? And additionally, from an administrative standpoint, to what degree should the culture of yeshiva integrate and reflect the realities of life after yeshiva? And to what degree should it be an independent, purely spiritual reality unto itself? And if it is the latter, to what end? I believe that learning in yeshiva beyond high school is a singular and irreplaceable experience, which if explained, articulated, and appreciated, can seamlessly enrich and sustain us throughout the rest of our lives. And it's this principle that I would like to develop with you this evening, and which, in my opinion, cannot only help us assimilate and incorporate the yeshiva experience into the rest of our lives, but should also serve to shape and inform our view on how the yeshiva atmosphere, culture, and campus should be structured and maintained. Moreover, and more importantly, I hope this will deepen our appreciation for what we are achieving here today by supporting and partnering with Yeshiva University and REITs in particular. Undoubtedly, parts of our discussion might be relevant for the other side of the proverbial mechitza, and the focus and function of the seminary experience. However, to be sure, there are critical and important differences, and therefore we'll have to leave that piece of the puzzle, perhaps, for another time. When Bnei Yisrael first entered Eretz Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu instructed them to arrange large stones and inscribe upon them the words of the Torah, as the Pasuk states in Parashas Kisavai, V'chosavta Aleihem, as called Divrei Torah Hazois. However, what was the purpose of this? Why was this necessary? Did Moshe Rabbeinu have to artificially manufacture additional tourist attractions for Eretz Yisrael? So Birucham explained in a Sefer Das Torah that it was for the purpose of formalizing and crystallizing the purpose of living in Eretz Yisrael in the first place. What was the goal? What were we trying to accomplish? That was in order to fulfill the mitzvahs of the Torah. And just like every successful business has a mission statement, every store has a sign outside publicizing the items that are for sale, so too when Klal Yisrael entered Eretz Yisrael, they needed to know what was the mission, what was the goal, what were we trying to accomplish? And that was to fulfill the mitzvahs of the Torah. And therefore, a few psukim later, Moshe Rabbeinu instructs Klal Yisrael again, Haskesh Ushma Yisrael, pay attention and listen, Klal Yisrael. Hayom Hazen Hiyesaliyom, for today you are becoming a nation. And the Sfarno comments, Haskesh, Tzir B'machshavtecha, conjure up an image of success, of that which you're trying to accomplish. Ushma, says the Sfarno Hisboinen, contemplate, formulate a strategy of how you're going to be able to achieve that, a game plan. And the Shem Yishmuel derives from here that whenever one begins any new endeavor, any undertaking, he first needs to formulate, to clarify, what are the goals? What is he trying to accomplish? And a strategy for how he is going to achieve that. Just like a contractor cannot build a house unless he first has blueprints, so too in the spiritual realm as well. At the outset, we first need to know what is the goal. What are we trying to accomplish? And then we can figure out how to get there. Perhaps for this reason as well, a few psukim earlier, Moshe Rabbeinu communicates once again to Klal Yisrael, Vayvi'enu el ha-mokom hazeh, Kadosh Baruch Hu brought us to this place, Vayiten lanu es ha-aretz hazois. And he gave us this land, Eretz Zavas Chalav Udvash, a land flowing with milk and honey. And Rashi comments, Vayvi'enu ha-mokom hazeh, that refers to the Beis HaMikdash, the Har HaBayis. Vayiten lanu es ha-aretz hazois refers to the larger Eretz Yisrael. However, if that's the case, why is the Har HaBayis mentioned first? If a person flies into Eretz Yisrael in a helicopter, he might encounter the Har HaBayis before the larger Eretz Yisrael. But if a person is entering Eretz Yisrael on foot, he will surely encounter the larger Eretz Yisrael before the Har HaBayis. Why then is the Har HaBayis mentioned first? And many explain, based on the Pasuk in Parshas Yisro, which tells us that prior to Kabbalah HaTorah, Kadosh Baruch Hu informed Klal Yisrael, V'asa eschem al kanfei nesharim, I placed you on eagle's wings, V'avi eschem elai, and I brought you to me. And the Targum Yonison ben Uziel explains that a Kadosh Baruch Hu miraculously transported us to the Mokom HaMikdash, where we offered the Karban Pesach, and then returned us to the Midbar in order to receive the Torah. What was the purpose of this exercise, of bringing us to the Har HaBayis, only then to return us to the Midbar in order to receive the Torah? And I believe it was in order to teach Klal Yisrael, as they were embarking upon this new chapter in Jewish history and they were about to receive the Torah, they needed to know what was the goal. What are we trying to accomplish? And therefore, Kadosh Baruch Hu brought them miraculously to the Har HaBayis to offer a Karban Pesach to demonstrate that the goal of receiving the Torah was ultimately to enter into Eretz Yisrael, to build the Beis HaMikdash, and to offer their Karbanos. And that's why the Beis HaMikdash is mentioned first, because that's the goal. And therefore, in its most basic level, I believe that the yeshiva experience is a time when many Talmidim can use to formalize their goals for life, to concretize, to crystallize what it is that they hope to accomplish and to devise a course of action in order to get there. And this is critical because without clarifying our goals, without having a vision for success, what we're attempting to achieve, we cannot possibly be successful. Of course, that's why role models are so critically important, because they provide us with a vision of a success which we can hope to emulate. Pasuk states in connection with the construction of the menorah in Parshas Truma, Ureva Asei, Moshe Rabbeinu was instructed, you should see and then you should create. And Rashi explains, because Moshe Rabbeinu had difficulty imagining what was the menorah supposed to look like. And therefore, Kadosh Baruch Hu presented him with a fiery prototype of the menorah. Ure'e, you should see. And from that, Moshe Rabbeinu will be able to work to create the menorah. And even though Moshe Rabbeinu ultimately was unsuccessful in completing the project, the pasuk states earlier, in connection with the menorah in Parshas Truma, Te'aseh ha-menorah, the menorah should be made in the passive. And Rashi explains, because Moshe Rabbeinu became so frustrated in the construction of the menorah, he took the brick of gold that he was working with, he threw it into the fire, and out emerged a completed menorah. Nonetheless, even to begin the project, to get it off the ground, Moshe Rabbeinu needed that prototype. He needed a vision of success, a model of that which he was trying to create and emulate. This pasuk, in connection with the menorah, Ure'e va'aseh, you should see and then you should create, the Baal HaTurim claims, is connected with the pasuk in Sefer Tehillim, Ure'e vanim levanecha, shalom al Yisrael, that we should be zeichet to see children and grandchildren following in our footsteps of Torah and mitzvahs. The same word, Ure'e, Ure'e va'aseh, Ure'e vanim levanecha. And perhaps the connection is because only when parents embrace their responsibility to be role models, not only to preach good behavior, but to practice good behavior, can we be zeichet to have children who follow in our footsteps of keeping the Torah and the mitzvahs. Ure'e va'aseh. Only when they see it can they do it as well. And therefore, when one has a role model, a prototype which he's working to emulate, then it's much easier, much more likely that he'll be successful. When Moshe Rabbeinu was first appointed to be the leader of Klal Yisrael in Parashat Shmos, the time of the burning bush, initially he resisted. And he responded to the Ribbono Shel Olam, Mi Anochi? Who am I? Ki Elech El Paro V'Chi Yotzis B'nei Yisrael Mi Mitzrayim. Who am I? And similarly later on in history, when David HaMelech is appointed as the leader, the king of Klal Yisrael again, initially he resists and he responds, Mi anoichi umi vesi. Who am I and who is my household? However, in Parshas Yisroi, when Yisroi advises Moshe Rabbeinu to deputize Shivim Zakenim in order to lighten his load and leading Klal Yisrael, we don't find any hesitation. They didn't resist. The pasuk states, "Vayivcha Moshe Anshei Chayil." Moshe Rabbeinu chose men of strength and integrity. Mikol Yisrael vayitin oisam roshim alam. And similarly, when Yeshua is appointed a successor of Moshe Rabbeinu, he also doesn't hesitate. He also didn't resist. Why didn't they follow the precedent of Moshe and David? It explains Rabbi Yosef Nechemya Kornitzer. It's of course the Rav in Krakow before the war. In his drashas, that it's because Moshe and David were being asked to do something that had never been done before. Moshe to be the leader of Klal Yisrael, to remove them from Mitzrayim. David to be the first king of Klal Yisrael, of the first kings. And therefore, it was a daunting task. And they understandably were afraid and scared, and resisted and hesitated. However, the Shivim Zakenim, Moshe Rabbeinu deputized, his successor, Yehoshua, were unafraid because they had a role model. They had Moshe Rabbeinu, who they could emulate. Therefore, it's critical that we clarify our goals, We know what we hope to achieve, that we have role models which provide us with a roadmap of how to achieve those goals. And that is, on its most basic level, what we can hopefully accomplish through yeshiva experience. It's a time to formulate those goals, to crystallize, and think about a roadmap of how to achieve them. And hopefully we have role models along the way to perhaps guide us. However, the usefulness and relevance of every role model is always somewhat compromised and mitigated by the fact that each person has their own unique mission in life, dictated by their unique strengths, talents, and experiences. And therefore, there's always some distance between a role model and ourselves. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, Mishnah Maseches Rosh Hashanah, and Rosh Hashanah, Kol Bo'ei Olam Ovlim Lefanav Kibnei Moron. On Rosh Hashanah, we all pass before the Ribbono Shel Olam Kibnei Moron. And there are numerous explanations the Gemara suggests for what is referred to as Bnei Moron. However, all three possibilities the Gemara mentions have this in common, that we pass before the Ribbono Shel Olam as individuals, one by one, in single file, as is reflected in Sana Tokef, we recite on Rosh Hashanah. And Rav Pinkus explains that we are all judged individually, one by one, in single file in Rosh Hashanah, because just like every animal is precious to the shepherd, each individual is precious to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's no one who's negligible. However, Rav Pinkus continues and he explains that each one of us is judged individually, one by one, in single file in Rosh Hashanah, because we're judged only based on our own challenges, our own problems, our own talents and strengths and experiences. And it's by that standard alone that we're judged, not in comparison to anyone else. Similarly, the Pasuk tells us in Parashas Balak, Darach Koichav mi Yaakov, there'll be a star that will rise out of Yaakov. And the Medrash quotes one opinion that this refers to the Melech HaMashiach, that he will rise out of the ranks of Kalal Yisrael. However, the Yerushalmi Maseches Ma'aser Sheni claims that this refers to every member of Kalal Yisrael, not just the Melech HaMashiach. Which is it? So Mori Naim quotes the name of the Baal Shem Tov, that in fact it's both. Because each individual is unique, and each individual, through their own strengths and talents, can contribute something towards the perfection of the world, and ultimately can do their part in bringing and hastening the coming of Mashiach. And the Baal Shem Tov continues that that's why the name Adam itself, Aleph Dalet Mem, is an acronym, is a Rashi Tevis, for Adam, David, and Mashiach, because each person, with their own talents, with their own strengths, can do their part in perfecting the world and bringing the coming of Mashiach. But since every person is unique, no role model is an exact parallel that corresponds to our unique situation. And therefore, they're not an ideal source of inspiration. Wouldn't it be better if we had a role model that lived in our identical set of circumstances? Wouldn't it be better if we were our own role models? And perhaps our years in yeshiva are for the purpose of creating a holier version of ourselves, which can serve to inspire us and motivate us throughout the rest of our lives. At the time of the Akedah, Pasuk tells us in Parshas Vayera, Kadosh Baruch Hu called out to Avraham twice, Avraham, Avraham. This is reminiscent of the Pasuk in Parshas Shmos at the time of the burning bush, when Kadosh Baruch Hu similarly called out to Moshe Rabbeinu twice, Moshe, Moshe. However, the Zohar HaKadosh notes there was a critical difference between the two, because in between the two names of Moshe, there is no pause. There is no psik. However, in between the two names of Avraham Avinu, there is a psik, there is a pause. And Reb Chaim Volozhiner explains in his comments on Masechtas Avos that this is because there are really two versions of ourselves. There is a version of ourselves, which is in Shamayim. that represents the potential of what each person can accomplish. But then there is the other version of ourselves in this world, which represents the reality of our accomplishments. And between the two names of Moshe Rabbeinu, there was no psik, there was no pause. Because Moshe Rabbeinu had brought those two versions of himself into alignment, into harmony, had unified, he had maximized his potential. His achievements in this world corresponded to his potential vision of himself in the next world. However, between the two names of Avram Avinu, of everyone else, there's a psik, there's a pause. Because there is some disparity between our potential and the reality of our own achievements. But at the same time, it's that vision of ourselves, of that potential of what we can achieve, that perhaps serves to inspire us and motivate us throughout the rest of a person's life. When Klal Yisrael would travel throughout the Midbar, so they were called by Shtei Chatzotzer's Kesef, by two silver trumpets, which alerted them it was time to travel or to go out to battle. The Mizritch Magid teaches Shtei Chatzotzer's Kesef as Shtei Chatzitzurois, as these two visions and versions of ourself. That what inspired a person to travel, to continue to grow spiritually, was that other tzura, that potential of himself, that potential that he has in Shamayim. And it was that same, better, holier version of himself that inspires us as well to go out to battle, to do war with the Yetzer Hara, and to improve. Perhaps for that reason, the Gemara tells us in Maseftas Yuma, G'dayla tshuva shemagas ad kisei hakovik. How great is tshuva that it can reach the kisei hakovik? As the Pasuk says in Sefer Hosea, tshuva Yisrael ad Hashem Aleikecha. Kaisel, do tshuva until the Ribbono Shel Olam. But why is the kisei hakovik the finish line of tshuva? Why is that the goal? And perhaps it's because engraved upon the Kisei HaKovid was the image of Yaakov Avinu. That's why the Pasuk says in Parashas Vayetze, when Yaakov Avinu arrives at the Makom HaMikdash, he falls asleep and he has a dream of a Sula Mutzav Arza V'Roshe Magia Shamayma, of a ladder, its base is on the ground, but reaches up into the heavens, U'malochei Olekim Oilem V'Yordim Boi. And the malachim of the Ribbono Shel Olam were elevated, were ascending and descending this ladder. But where were the malachim going? So Medrash tells us that they were ascending to the Kisei HaKovid. In fact, the Baal HaTurim claims that's alluded to in the word Sulam itself, which has a numerical equivalent, it's a gematria 130, the same gematria as Zeh Kisei HaKovid. Why were they ascending to the Kisei HaKovid and then descending? So the Medrash continues and explains that it's because the Navi Yechezkel tells us there were four images engraved upon the Kisei HaKovid. There was a kruv, a baby, an aryeh, a lion, a nesher, an eagle, and an adam. And that adam, says the Medrash, that human being, that adult, was Yaakov Avinu. And the Medrash says the Malachim went up, they saw the image of Yaakov Avinu engraved upon the Kisei HaKovid, but they did a double take. Woman, we just saw him. They went back down to check, is that the same image that we saw before? And they informed Yaakov Avinu that it was his image that was engraved upon the Kisei HaKovid. Perhaps that's why when Yaakov Avinu wakes up out of his sleep, he proclaims, Achein Yesh Hashem B'mokam Hazeh, V'nochi lo yodoti. Behold, the Kadosh Baruch Hu was found in this place, and I did not know. And explains of Shimshon Ostropolia, Achein, behold, is an acronym of Rosh Tevis for Aryeh, a lion, Kruv, the baby, and a Nesher, an eagle. Achein Yesh Hashem b'mokom hazeh. Says, yeah, I knew those three images were engraved on the Kisei HaKovid, but V'nochi lo yodoti. Continues of Shimshon Yashapoya Anochi is also an acronym of Rosh Tevis, Aryeh, Nesher, Kruv, and the Yud is Yaakov. Anochi lo yadati. I didn't know that I was on the fourth side of the Kisei HaKovid. And that image of Yaakov Avinu represents the potential that every person can accomplish. And therefore, Gedayla Tshuva Shemogas HaKisei HaKovid, how great is Tshuva? Because through Tshuva, a person can reach the Kisei HaKovid, he can unify these two versions of himself. To harmonize, to bring together into alignment his accomplishments in this world with his potential. It's engraved upon the Kisei HaKovid. And in that sense, Yaakov Avinu is the representative for each member of Klal Yisrael. Parshas Vayishlach, as Yaakov Avinu arrives in Shechem after his encounter with Esav, the Pasuk tells us, Vayotzev Shom Mizbeach, he established there a Mizbeach, Vayikra Lekel Alekei Yisrael. And he called him the God and God of Israel. And Rashi explains, based on the language of the Pasuk, which seemed to be a little redundant, that in fact, it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Vayikra Lekel, Kama, HaKadosh Baruch Hu called him, Yaakov Avinu, Alekei Yisrael, the God of Israel. And of course, this is disturbing. And the Ramban explains comments that contained within this is a Soyed Gadol, a great secret. Rav Schechter explains in the name of the Soloveitchik that the great secret that's contained within this is that Yaakov Avinu is the Elokei Yisrael in the sense that he's our representative, our conduit by which we relate to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And perhaps just like the image of Yaakov Avinu is engraved upon the Kisei HaKovid, representing the great potential of that which he can accomplish, so too, the image of each one of us is engraved upon the Kisei HaKovid. We have that kind of potential. And Gedayla Tshuva Shemogas at Kisei HaKovid, through the process of Tshuva, we can bring our accomplishments in this world in alignment with the potential that's engraved upon the Kisei HaKovid. And perhaps years in yeshiva gives us an opportunity to become our own role models. It's a time when a person can live, perhaps on a higher plane, which he can look back to in life for inspiration and motivation. And each person, at every stage of life, needs some greater level of Kedusha, which he's attempting and striving to attain. The kind Hedyut, regular kohen in the Beis HaMikdash, wore four garments. The kohen gadol wore a total of eight garments. And some of the garments were similar to that of the kohen Hedyut. However, this is a machlekes hatanoim, the brayso Masechtas Yuma was the avnet, the belt that was worn both by the kohen Hedyut as well as the kohen gadol. Were they the same avnet? Or was the avnet of the kohen gadol different than the avnet of the kohen Hedyut, with their belts different? And the Arsameach explains that this is in fact a conceptual machlekes, an argument about the status of the kohen gadol. According to the opinion in Tanoim that the belt that they wore was identical, so the status of the kohen gadol is fundamentally the same as the kohen Hedyut. He wears a few extra garments, he has a few extra responsibilities, requirements, fundamentally the same type of kohen, what I would refer to as a kohen plus. However, the opinion in Tanoim that the avnet that was worn by the kohen gadol was different than the avnet that was worn by the kohen Hedyut explains the Arsameach is because he understood the kohen gadol is a fundamentally different type of kohen. He's not the same genre of kohen at all as the kohen Hedyut. And the Arsameach relates this to another machlekes between the Talmud Bavli and the Talmud Yerushalmi on a related issue. When the Kohen Gadol first came to perform Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, how many karbonos of initiation did he need to bring? So the opinion of the Talmud Bavli is he needed to bring two. One corresponding to the traditional Minchas Chinuch that was offered by every Kohen on his first day of doing the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, and a second corresponding to those additional responsibilities and requirements, the role and the duties that was unique to the Kohen Gadol. However, the opinion of the Talmud Yerushalmi is that he only offered one initiation karbon, one minchas chinuch, that was unique to the Kohen Gadol. And again, the Or Sameach explains that it's because, according to the Talmud Bavli, the Kohen Gadol is fundamentally the same as the Kohen Hedyot, as the regular Kohen. Therefore, he has to bring a traditional minchas chinuch, but he has a few extra garments, roles and duties and responsibilities, and therefore he brings a second minchas chinuch. However, the opinion of the Talmud Yerushalmi is that fundamentally the Kohen Gadol is an entirely different type of Kohen. Therefore, he brings a different minchas chinuch, it's an entirely different genre of Kohen. And believe that, in fact, both of these opinions are correct, but perhaps from different perspectives. From the perspective of Klal Yisrael, from the outsider looking in, so there was really no substantive difference between the Kohen Hedyot and the Kohen Gadol. They both represented individuals who dedicated their lives to a greater degree to the service of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And the minor distinctions that existed between them were trivial and academic. However, from the perspective of the Kohanim, within the Beis HaMikdash, so the Kohen Gadol was an entirely different type of karbon. He was never permitted to leave the Beis HaMikdash. His commitment and dedication was complete. Therefore, all of Klal Yisrael perhaps looks up to the Kohanim as a greater level of commitment and dedication to the service of the Ribbono Shel Olam, which we can aspire to emulate. But it was the Kohanim who looked up to the Kohen Gadol. And similarly, the Kohen Gadol as well needed a greater image of Kedusha to which he was aspiring to emulate, which inspired him. The Beis HaMikdash, as we know, was divided into different quadrants. Well, there was the Azara that had the Mizbeach HaNechoshes, the Heichal had the Mizbeach HaZov, then even further within there was the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which housed the Aron and the Luchais, in which only the Kohen Gadol was permitted to enter, and even then, only once a year, and even then, it was shrouded in smoke. What was the purpose of having the Kodesh HaKadoshim? It was rarely used. No one ever went in there. And even the Kohen Gadol only went in once a year, wasn't able to see too much. The Luchais, he never saw, was contained within the Aron. In fact, when Moshe Rabbeinu descended from Har Sinai with the Luchas, they were immediately whisked away and stored and hidden in the Yaron. Why wouldn't they have had a greater impact if we paraded them around, perhaps, to all the day schools in Bergen County and the Five Towns and Lincoln Center? Let all the children see the Luchas? Why were they hidden away in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, where even there only the Kohen Gadol was permitted to enter once a year? Rav Zalman Sarotzkin explained in his drashas and his hesped for the Brisker Rav that it's because the Luchais, the Aron, represents the pristine, untainted, and untouched Dvar Hashem. And that was most necessary for the Kohen Gadol. Because while Klal Yisrael looked up to the Kohanim looked up to the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol needed that model of inspiration, the Luchais, that pristine and untainted and untouched Dvar Hashem, which inspired him. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Chulin that many of the Big Day Kahuna had Cheles. We find Cheles in the Tzitzis as well, because Cheles is special, it's unique. Because the color of the Cheles is Doimel Yam, similar to the sea. The Yam is Doimel Rakia, similar to the sky. The Rakia is Doimel Kisei HaKovet. Reminds us of the Kisei HaKovet. But why do we need to go these progressive stages? Let's just have a garment, a color, that reminds us directly of the Kisei HaKovet. And Rav Moshe explains in the Drash Moshe that it reflects that every person in every stage of life needs a greater level of Kedusha, a model that he's aspiring to achieve and to emulate. So is the Tcheles that's Doimel Yam, is the Yam that's Doimel Rakia, it's the Rakia that's doing the Kisei HaKovet. It was Klal Yisrael that looked up to the Kohanim, The Kohen who looked up to the Kohen Gadol was the Kohen Gadol who looked up to the Luchos. And it was that system, that pyramid of inspiration, that reminds every person of his potential and can serve to inspire him, ultimately to achieve his potential and to reach the Kisei HaKavod. And perhaps that is the main function of our years in yeshiva, is to formulate that model that will inspire and motivate a person throughout the rest of his life. The best moral model possible. A better version of himself. I believe that our years in yeshiva, this creation, this kind of model of inspiration and motivation that a person will carry with him throughout the rest of his life is critical ingredient to the secret of Jewish continuity. The Gemara tells us in Masechtas Yuma that throughout our long history of Klal Yisrael, whether in Mitzrayim or in the Midbar or beforehand, we always had a yeshiva at the center of our community. Avram Avinu had a yeshiva, Yitzchak, Yaakov. We wouldn't expect the Rambam to bring this. It's not a halachic statement anywhere in the Mishnah Torah. But if the Rambam were going to cite the statement of the Gemara Masechtas Yuma, we would have presumed it would appear in Hilchos Talmud Torah. But the Rambam is discussing our commitment historically to Limud HaTorah in its place within the community. However, the Rambam does bring this statement of the Gemara, but not in Hilchos Talmud Torah, rather, surprisingly, in Hilchos Avodas Kochavim. As the Rambam is describing the development and emergence of Klal Yisrael as a nation in the midst of a pagan culture. Why does the Rambam bring it here? Perhaps on the one hand, it's in order to emphasize that Limud HaTorah is something that is not just an activity that we engage in, but is rather the identity of Klal Yisrael as a nation is itself defined by Limud HaTorah. Plays a critical part in the story of the development of Klal Yisrael as a nation, because it defines our very identity. As Yaakov Avinu was preparing to descend to Mitzrayim in Parshas Vayigash, he instructs Yehuda, "Bas Yehuda shalach lahiris lefan of Goshen, to pave the way to Goshen." One opinion in the Medrash is that he instructed him to acquire houses in which Klal Yisrael could live. But the other opinion in the Medrash is cited by Rashi and Chumash, that it was a sak in Lobeis HaTalmud to establish a yeshiva, Shemisham Teitze Hora. From there, guidance would emerge to the rest of the community. Rav Gifter suggests in his Sefer Pirkei Torah that perhaps these two explanations are one and the same. And that is because the identity of a Jewish home is defined by its commitment to Talmud Torah. There cannot be a Jewish home without Torah. In fact, the Gemara tells us in Masechtas Bava Kamma, commenting on the pasuk in Parshas Beshalach, Vayelchu Shloshes Yomim Velo Motzu Mayim. When Klal Yisrael was way out of Mitzrayim, they traveled for 3 days and they weren't able to find water and they complained. And the Gemara comments, Ein Mayim Ela Torah. The water that's mentioned here by the pasuk is referring to Torah. From here, the Gemara derives we should never go 3 days without Limud HaTorah, which is why Chazal established Jerusalem Kriyas HaTorah every Monday and Thursday in addition to Shabbos. However, why is Torah referred to as water compared to water is the most inexpensive of all beverages? Why not compare it to fine wine, to, you know, 25-year scotch? Why to water? It explains the Chafetz Chaim that it's because a person can live without fine wine. He can certainly live without the scotch, but he cannot live without water. And similarly, says the Chafetz Chaim, Limud HaTorah is not just an activity that we engage in. It is literally the air that we breathe and the water that we drink. It is what sustains Klal Yisrael. And perhaps that's why the Rambam begins Hilchos Talmud Torah in a somewhat unusual fashion. Typically, when the Rambam begins a section of halachas, he describes the mitzvah, and then he goes on to explain and to delineate who's included. Maybe then he mentions who's excluded. However, the beginning of Hilchos Talmud Torah, the Rambam begins abruptly. He never describes the formal activity of Limud HaTorah. He jumps straight to who's exempt. Only eight halachas later does the Rambam finally arrive at describing the personal obligation of Limud HaTorah. Why does the Rambam begin in this fashion? So Ezra was kind enough to give me his father's doctoral dissertation. Rav Dov Friedberg suggests in his crafting the 613 commandments that perhaps it's because the Rambam felt that the obligation to learn Torah is not communicated in the Pshuto Shel Mikra, in the text of the Torah itself, but only through the derivations of Chazal. And as we know, the Rambam emphasized the distinction between that which is found in the Pshuto Shel Mikra and that which is, as he describes, Divrei Soferim. And in order, therefore, to indicate that the mitzvah of Talmud Torah is not found in the text of the Torah itself, the Rambam puts it somewhat later. However, Rav Moshe Shapiro suggests, it's brought in the Sefer Afike Mayim, that perhaps the Rambam begins Hilchos Talmud Torah in this fashion, because it's not like lulav, it's not like shofar or matzah, it is ubiquitous. It is the framework for the rest of the Jewish experience, and therefore it literally needs no introduction. The Rambam doesn't have to describe the mitzvah for us because we live it. And therefore the Rambam jumps to those who are excluded. And perhaps for this reason the Rambam includes the statement of the Gemara Masechtas Yuma, the history of the yeshiva in Klal Yisrael, not in Hilchos Talmud Torah, but in the development of Klal Yisrael as a nation in the midst of a pagan culture in Hilchos Avodas Kochavim. However, perhaps the Rambam brings it here for an additional reason. Because there is one yeshiva that predated the yeshiva of Avram Avinu, was the yeshiva of Shem V'Yever. And the Ravid already raises the issue, what happened to the yeshiva of Shem V'Yever? Why doesn't the Rambam mention that in his history of the yeshiva and his development of Klal Yisrael as a nation in Hilchos Avodas Kochavim? I believe that it's because it was a critical difference between the yeshiva of Shem V'Yever and the yeshiva of Avram Avinu. As Yaakov Avinu was on his way to the house of Lavan, he stopped for an additional 14 years to learn in Yeshiva Shem V'Yever. And many ask, Yaakov Avinu at this time was over 60, was an accomplished individual, a veteran of the Beis Medrash, Yaakov Ishtam Yoshev Aholim, why did he need an additional 14 years in the Beis Medrash of Shem V'Yever? And Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky explains that it's because in the Beis Medrash of Avram Avinu, he learned how to survive in a supportive religious atmosphere, in an ideal and idyllic religious experience. However, he was now about to enter into the house of Lavan, which would be a hostile religious environment. And for that skill set, he went to Shem V'Yever, where it survived the Dor HaMabul, the Dor HaFloga. How do you survive in a hostile religious environment? For this reason as well, at the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, the Torah describes Yosef as ki ben zekunim huloi. He was unique and special amongst the children of Yaakov Avinu. And Rashi explains, because all that he had learned in the yeshiva of Shem V'Yever, he passed on to Yosef. That's why he was 17 years old, perhaps. When he warrants this description, the Ostrov Tzareba explains, because when does a person begin to learn? The age of 3. How many years of knowledge did Yaakov Avinu have to transmit to him? That which he learned in Shem V'Yever was 14 years. So it wasn't until the age of 17. It was worthy of the description, ki ben zekunim hulo, he had integrated all of the lessons of Shem V'Yever. But why did he pass it on to Yosef? So explains of Yaakov that it's because Yaakov Avinu knew that Yosef would have to endure a difficult period in Mitzrayim, which would be a hostile religious environment, and therefore he passed on this survival skill set of Shem V'Yever, specifically to Yosef. However, the Rambam omits this entirely from the development of Klal Yisrael as a nation and the continuity of Klal Yisrael. Because while we need to learn the lessons of Shem V'Yever in order to confront the realities of life, which can be challenging and not always be a supportive religious environment, it is only the yeshiva of Avraham Avinu that marks the beginning of the development of Klal Yisrael as a nation. Because it is the idyllic yeshiva of Avram that teaches us not only how to survive, but reminds us why we need to survive. It shows us the great potential and divine mission we have as individuals and as a people, and was therefore at the yeshiva of Avram that began to stem the tide of Avodah Zarah and inspire the world to recognize the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. It was the yeshiva of Avram that inspired Avram's children to follow in his footsteps and mark the beginning of the Jewish people. At Yeshiva University, it reads, we have the ambitious goal of educating our Talmidim with the lessons of Yeshiva Shem V'Yever, of giving them the tools and the skills they need in order to thrive in the challenging and sometimes hostile professional world. However, we must also instill the lessons of the Yeshiva of Avram to create an ideal and idyllic religious experience, a purely spiritual oasis which can serve as a source of inspiration for our Talmidim for the rest of their lives, to enable them to get a glimpse, perhaps, of a more spiritual version of themselves, which can remind them of their great potential, inspire them to strive to reach for the Kisei HaKavod, to do their part in perfecting the world and bringing about the coming of Mashiach, b'mher v'yomeinu, amen. Thank you for listening and for your continuing partnership with us in this critical mission.
There will be mincha in the back of the room for those who need to still daven mincha. The reception is open now in the far end of the hallway to your on the way out towards the end of the room. Is there a chiyuv for mincha?